It's called The Black Man Is God.
It's
called The Black Man Is God.
Next album.
This is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all fighting history. Be the easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can whoop me? You really do?
Anybody on your watch? Anybody in my family?
He's young. He's handsome.
They know it.
He's a poet, a prophet.
The goal ain't have a net. Who would have dreamed from karaoke to cassette? I met Obie as an OG in the taxi. Yeah, I was legends, rest in peace, Pop's a legend, Mike Corey and Sean Jordan was the essence of the young chorus where we grew from. Seemed like a second, now they less important to the new sun. I guess today weighs more than yesterday, it's morbid to suggest today will come for them too. When it's a brother younger than you, who humble and who? Used to coach him, now he coached him, blew up, who knew? He caught you on a rough night, you were stumbling through. Now he telling you to get yours, get yours.
All of you reporters made it hard on them. Never write about me like that. Never make me think alone. Just make me angry. Never make me go underdog. And never talk about who's gonna stop me. Or ain't nobody gonna stop me. Not a heavyweight in the world fast enough to stop me.
Well, it took long enough, but the NBA playoffs are finally, finally here. Finally! Let me say that one more time. The NBA playoffs are finally upon us. In fact, they're going to tip off in about 52 minutes with the Cavs and the Pacers. And so I had to make sure that my people got a podcast from us to talk NBA playoffs and this NBA season. So welcome to the preseason podcast of the year, Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. You can find us on iTunes, of course, and on Stitcher Radio. Thank you. And we have a very special guest on for the podcast this afternoon. This is Saturday, April the 15th. I hope all y'all filed your taxes, your delinquents out there. I hope y'all made it, filed your paperwork, you know what I mean, and got your little refund check. Do not blow it all in one place, okay? That Xbox will be there in 6 months. You don't need to blow it on an Xbox, okay? I'm just saying. But yeah, man, we're going to talk NBA playoffs with a very, very special guest. But again, shout out to the website, hiphopsportsreport.com. We have a lot of great stuff on there, and there's a lot of great stuff happening in music right now, obviously with Kendrick just dropping, and there's a lot to discuss with that, and we will have all that covered in the very near future. But today is all about basketball. Again, you can hit us on Twitter at twitter.com/HHSReport. And facebook.com/HHS report as well. We're on Google Plus, man. We're all over the proverbial map. So without further ado, I want to get right into it because we got a lot to cover, man. My special guest for this afternoon is a writer for formerly of hoopsworld.com, an affiliate of USA Today, formerly of Sheridan Hoops and LakerNation.com, and currently with basketballinsiders.com. Please welcome Mr. Jabari Davis to the podcast. Jabari, what's going on, man? How you feeling?
I'm great. It's definitely an honor to be on with you. I appreciate that type of intro. I need to, if I ever make it, I need you as my intro, man. I need you just to hype me up because I definitely appreciate that.
Hey, man, I'd be glad to flavor that situation for you. You know what I'm saying? There's nothing more that I'd rather do in life than to be a successful hype man. You know what I mean? Right now I'm hyping the podcast, but if I could hype you at the same time, man, that's all the better. You know, that's what I'm here for. So, but I mean, you got a nice little resume put together, so I don't want to, you know, poo-poo that by any means. You're doing your thing, man. So appreciate you taking the time to join us. Your boy Jay Hicks, like I said, has got you covered with the intro, but I wanted to get into some basketball talk for sure, man. Let's just start where everybody's talking, man. Again, we know the playoffs are going to tip off here shortly, so in fact, the first game may begin before that we even wrap on this recording. But I wanted to talk MVP. Where do you shake out on it, man? Everybody's got an opinion, and so it seems. And even if that opinion is one of just confusion or just being torn altogether, you know, I've kind of waffled back and forth on my imaginary vote. And I've, you know, and it was funny was that I saw that I think you tweeted or retweeted recently that nobody's ever begged for the award more than the Rockets and James Harden, which I don't think is totally inaccurate. For those that follow Hip Hop Sports Report, we did post a column a few weeks back about James Harden and his candidacy, basically just saying, look, man, no one's taking away from what he's done this year. However, we've seen Mike D'Antoni transform some guys into MVPs that later on we kind of felt, you know what, that probably wasn't deserved. And we know that that offense is just a breeding ground for monstrous statistics. So given all that, you know, and like I said, there's a lot more that I can say, but you have the floor. What's your take on MVP and who would get your vote?
Yeah, you know, in mine, I should acknowledge it's an imaginary vote as well. I don't get to vote either. I've only been covering the league for about 5 years now, so I haven't reached that level, either. But you know, when I retweeted that, it's no disrespect to Harden, nor the Rockets, because what they've done this year has been nothing short of phenomenal. I really have to pay respect to that front office because they put every single piece that needed to be put. Place around James Harden, they found it, and every single move worked this past offseason. So absolute respect to them. But the answer to this question for me is Russell Westbrook. Again, that's not to take anything away from what Harden's done, and what he's been able to do under Mike D'Antoni. But if I'm looking at those two rosters and I'm looking at the two situations, especially given the fact that that OKC was coming off of a summer where whether they expected it or not, it just happened. They lost one of the best players in the league. And it's not as though they went out and retooled or, got a ton of other, brought in a ton of talent, beyond what they got in the draft last year. So when I look at those situations and I look at the fact that I don't even care that Russell Westbrook had 42, triple doubles, which I'm not going to poo-poo. I'm just saying I'm not basing on that. I'm basing it on the fact that he absolutely dominated the league on a team that's, in my opinion, not as good. I'm not going to say they're terrible or anything like that, because obviously you don't want to disrespect guys like Victor Oladipo, Enes Kanter, Steven Adams, and the rest of the guys.
Well, feel free to disrespect them if you want. If you want to disrespect them, this is the place to do it. I'm just saying.
I'll fall short of that. But when I look at what Russell Westbrook was able to do, especially like I said, with Kevin Durant, exiting stage left, kind of unexpectedly, and just being able to just pick the ball up and run with it, I find it difficult to hate on what that man has done this year.
Understandable. Now this was the rub for me personally was with regards to Westbrook. I've always supported Westbrook. I was supporting Westbrook on Twitter and on this website four or five years ago, around the time when they were in the finals or just when they came off the finals, that finals run, and people like Magic Johnson were taking shots at Russ, calling him the worst point guard they'd ever seen and all this other kind of craziness. I'm like, hold up, y'all. Y'all are wilding if you think Russell Westbrook is not doing work out here, especially given the fact that Oklahoma City needed his offensive production, and Kevin Durant has a tendency to be passive at times. So I always thought he kind of got a bad rap for that. Having said that, now that Durant's gone and Westbrook is the man, and even though they need his scoring now more than ever, I think that I've always had this thing where I just refuse to believe in shoot first point guards as the number one option on a team. Like, those guys don't win championships. And the only exceptions that you could make to that rule, really, as the being the leaders of those teams, is Isaiah Thomas in the late 80s, but you could argue that he wasn't shoot first. And then Steph Curry just a couple of years ago, but you could also argue that that championship might not have played out the way that it did, that final series, had Kyrie and Kevin Love been healthy. So, I just don't really believe in that. And so when you see Russell Westbrook take 400 more shots than anybody else in the league, and when you see Russell Westbrook break a 35-year-old turnover record, which I believe he did, I think Harden did too, for the record, but when you see that stuff, I mean, he's clearly chasing stats, you can defend him, and I think it's a great point, a feather in his cap for his MVP candidacy, is the fact that Oklahoma City has this dynamic record when he actually attains a triple-double, but he's still out there chasing stats. I still think Oklahoma City was padding his stats, helping him get rebounds where the bigs would kind of block out on free throw misses and let him come in and get the board. He's getting two or three defensive boards like that a game, and if you take those away, he basically has the same numbers as James Harden, right? And James Harden is on a better team with a better record. So, all that stuff kind of made it not totally sit well with me. But when I – and then there's the other aspect of just giving the MVP to the best player, which – I think, you know, doesn't always sit right with everybody, and myself included, because I actually don't really believe in that philosophy. But there are a lot of people out there and pundits that believe that that is the philosophy in which voters should take. You ought to just vote for the best player, because you know that way, at least in 10 or 15 years, you're not going to regret having voted for the best player. And the best player is LeBron James, and I don't think anybody's going to argue that point. Having said all that, my imaginary vote, as difficult as it will be, would have to go to Russell Westbrook as well. I think Russ, I don't think his team is very good. And I think that he's dragged that team to where they are. I know that he's taken a ton of shots. He's turned the ball over a ton. He's setting records for usage rate, all these types of things. But when I think of how we're going to remember this season, we're going to remember this as the Westbrook season. We saw him single-handedly carry Oklahoma City to victories in the second half of the year. Now, granted, most of those were against bum teams, but, you know, still, though, he still put them on his back and carried them to wins, and it still helped him get the sixth seed in the West with a team that I don't think is particularly good. So I would give him the nod as well. The triple-double thing, though, I've seen a lot of people kind of argue recently that triple-doubles are an arbitrary statistic. I don't think that that's necessarily inaccurate either. However, I do feel it's a little unfair for people to say that now, because nobody was saying that all these years before, that it was arbitrary. And then when Russ started putting them up like gangbusters, now all of a sudden it's an arbitrary stat. You know what I mean?
Yeah, folks, you know, here's the thing with that. We can say that, oh, you know, his bigs were, you know, we're helping him out. Even though statistics have shown that, yes, while they were doing that, there's a reason for it, because, you know, anytime he would get that board and start the break, I think when he made a pass, the players, you know, shot 55% higher, something along those lines. Here's the thing. Guys have been chasing stats forever. I don't understand why, you know, some of us, and I'm certainly not accusing you of it, but, you know, I guess we all do it to a certain degree, you know, when it comes to the Twitter, you know, mentality. But why some of us will use certain stats or certain arguments against one player, but not realize that, like, say, for instance, do we think that James Harden wasn't chasing the same stats? I mean, you know what I mean? Like, maybe he didn't make as much of a big deal about triple doubles, but he was doing the same thing. You know, guys have chased the scoring title for years. Guys have done, you know, have chased the assist titles or the steals title, you know, for years. I just feel like if you're an individual, and I'm speaking generally, if you're an individual that doesn't like Russell Westbrook, you're going to use that against him. If you're an individual that doesn't like James Harden, you're going to say, hey, look, he still doesn't play defense or this, that, and the other. If you don't like Kawhi, you make fun of him for not talking. You know what I mean? Like, people are going to find their reasons for disliking, you know, certain players or
confirmation bias.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if they don't necessarily like the way that the style that guy brings or his attitude or whatever, you know, with the media, they're going to find a reason. Russell Westbrook was fantastic this year. James Harden was too. So was Kawhi Leonard. And as you mentioned, so was LeBron James. But if you really break it down without the bias, for me, Russell Westbrook was the best player in the league.
I would give it to Russ. I would put Harden second. I would put LeBron third, and I would put Kawhi fourth. But I think all of those guys are worthy. You raised a point about kind of people believing whatever narrative they want to believe, and I'm going to come back to that. I'm glad you brought that up. And there were some other controversial awards too. Do you have any thoughts on Rookie of the Year or Defensive Player of the Year or the All NBA situation with Paul George? You know, he's got a lot of dough on the line. All of a sudden, he became like the Superman in the second half of the second half of the year. It was like PG turned into MJ. It's like, oh, okay, there's money on the line. Okay, like $75 million. Okay, well, let me look like Jordan these last 2 months of the season. So I didn't know if you had any thoughts on any of those.
When it comes to the Rookie of the Year, I understand the argument that, hey, if you only play 31 games, you know, you can't get a Rookie of the Year. Just like I understand the argument that, I understand the argument in favor of Embiid. For me, the best rookie was Joel Embiid. I would have liked to have obviously seen more. Obviously, those fans in Philly would have liked to see more, more than either of us would have. A case could have been made for Brogdon, you know, over there in Milwaukee.
He's good. I guess he is good.
Exactly. And what I appreciate from him is that we were able to see him get better over the course of the year. Obviously, some of that was aided by the fact that they had Milwaukee dealt with some injuries. But, you know, either way, we have a rookie, we have a rookie swingman that stepped into the mix and really showed himself. So for me, if you're going by just the best rookie, it's Joel Embiid. For who had the best rookie season in totality, it's Brogdon. Like you said, like an argument when it comes to Defensive Player of the Year, for instance, me personally, I would go with Kawhi, but I absolutely understand 100% when someone says, no, it's Draymond. I get the want, the desire to, show Rudy Gobert some love because he was absolutely phenomenal. He was already a good defender and he took a step forward, even further, this year. So I get that. But for me, it would probably be Kawhi just because I think he's the most versatile and most devastating perimeter defender. I guess I should say most versatile would probably be Draymond because he can kind of do it on any type of player, depending upon the matchup. In terms of if you look at that Spurs or lineup, that Spurs roster, they don't have a whole ton, they don't have a ton of defenders on it. Like they have guys that are willing to play defense, but they don't have a ton of guys that can actually do it. And, when I look at what Kawhi is asked to do and how much ground he's asked to make, for me, I understand why and what I think is going to take place, why he'll get his third consecutive one.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with all of that. It's really difficult to pick a winner of this group. I kind of feel like Draymond deserves one. And I don't know. I know, like they said on The Wire, Snoop said, deserve got nothing to do with it. I get that. It ain't really about deserving. But you could have made a strong case that Draymond could have got it either the last 2 years. And I watched Draymond at least in one game. I know he's done it more than one game. But there was one game in particular. I think Durant was hurt at this point, and they were just getting killed at home by the 76ers, Golden State was. Mm-hmm. And the fourth quarter started. I think the Warriors were down like maybe 10 or 12 points at the start of the fourth quarter. And Draymond just decided that they weren't going to lose that game. And he was going to turn it up a notch on the defensive end of the floor. And he was flying around. He was getting deflections. He was blocking shots. He was switching off on guys. He was calling out coverages. And before you knew it, in 3 minutes, the lead was down to like three. And then, of course, Golden State won going away. And it was single-handedly Draymond just flipped that game. And not a lot of guys can do that on the defensive end of the defensive end of the floor. So I give him a lot of credit for that. Gobert, the advanced metrics love Rudy Gobert. Mm-hmm. And Kawhi, like you said, there's an element of Kawhi where, if you wanted to impart the best player philosophy on MVP, which is LeBron, if you wanted to do that for Defensive Player of the Year, I think you'd have to do it in favor of Kawhi because I think LeBron is still the best player, and I think Kawhi is the player best equipped for stopping the best player, if that makes sense. So the closest thing to a LeBron stopper we have in this league is Kawhi. I've joked before that he was built in a lab by scientists, genetically engineered specifically to stop LeBron James. That's why I think the Cavs would rather play the Warriors in the final series than they ever would the Spurs, because LeBron wouldn't want to have to deal with Kawhi for 4 to 7 games. But
Did you ever see that clip of I think it was in the 2013 finals where LeBron, I think
he's like rolling his eyes when he comes in the game.
Exactly. Where in fact he was at the free throw line.
Yes.
And he's smiling and then the buzzer sounds and he looks turns
over
around,
his shoulder.
And it wasn't just a roll of the eyes, it was like this dude again? This dude? So I'm 100% with you on that. And of course that's no disrespect to Draymond, because Draymond was absolutely phenomenal. If he ends up getting the award, it's well deserved. But in terms of the closest thing that we can possibly say that to a LeBron stopper, that's Kawhi.
Yeah, definitely. So where do you shake out on just media members in general having this kind of impact on contract negotiations? So for those of you who don't know, Paul George of the Pacers, he is in a situation where if he makes an All-NBA team this year, whether even if it's an All-NBA third team, he's in line for a huge contract spike, and where the Pacers could then offer him an additional $75 million on his contract for having made that All-NBA team. So it's kind of like a contract technicality thing that's in the CBA, but that's kind of the gist of it, is that certain players in certain situations, if you make so many All-Star teams or so many All-NBA teams, you're eligible for certain incentive bonuses. And this one for Paul George is, and part of it is to try to keep superstars in their cities, right? In their current cities that have their rights or that drafted them or whatever, because it's not like Indianapolis is attracting a bunch of free agents. I mean, let's be honest. So, in order to try to keep Paul George there, the incentive is more money. So they've introduced this new thing, but the All-NBA is decided upon by the media. So now you have media members that are in this tough spot where they're forced to decide whether or not this player is worthy of earning an additional $75 million on top of his contract. Where do you shake out on media members having that kind of control? Or do you think they need to tweak that rule in any kind of way?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question, and because I've gone back and forth on that one. When I initially heard about it, I was like, oh, that's terrible. You know, the media shouldn't have, you know, you should not have that type of influence. But then when I really stopped and thought about it, I don't have a viable answer that, it, you know, that would be any better. Because, like, say, for instance, we were to say, oh, okay, you know, we'll give it to the players, you know, for them to decide. Like, I'll be straightforward with you. The player, you know, like while, yes, the media can have some bias, the players have the same type of bias. In fact, it's even deeper because either they are very good friends with the individual or they may, you know, they may make a decision based upon their competitive nature.
Right.
So, look, if it were so for instance, you know, just to clarify, that he has to make one of the, you know, like, he just has to make one of the All NBA teams, not even, you know, not just the first NBA All NBA team. And if it were like if he had to make the All NBA first team, I would say, okay, that may be a little bit much power for the media to have. But the fact that he's got three shots at it, he can either be first team, second team, or third team. I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. I don't think it's great, but I don't really have a viable alternative. And, you know, if we're being honest, you know, that second half that he put on, quite frankly, probably is going to get him on one of those teams.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think he knew. his agent knew. I know that's for sure. His agent put a word in his ear. It was like, hey, Paul, come here right quick. Come here.
70.
Yeah, you know, $70 million. Like, you know, you need to start balling like now, right?
Yeah.
And then next thing you know, Paul George is going off. It's like, wow, 40 again, you know. But I agree that there's no other group or entity within basketball that is better equipped to make this type of decision. Now, granted, media members can have their biases too, but. Mm-hmm. I mean, who would you rather do it? You can't have the players vote on it. You can't have the executives or teams vote on it themselves, because obviously there's a extreme conflict of interest there. So there's really no other alternative but to just leave it up to the media to decide, I think. And it's just kind of a weird situation. We'll see how it all shakes out. And I hope Paul George gets it, because I'm actually a big Paul George fan. I think he's one of the more underrated star players in the league. So hopefully he's able to get to that point. But transitioning just a bit, we talked about statistics earlier, and I just think that and basically statistics being a vehicle or a conduit to tell whatever story it is you want to tell.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure as a writer, you've probably dealt with that. I know that as a writer, and I make predictions on the website all the time. A lot of them are correct, but I make them all the time on the website, and I tend to fall into that same place where I'm trying not to find statistics only to suit my argument. You know what I mean? And so, but I think in this day and age, I think we're kind of on statistical overload with all the advanced analytics and everything. I see ESPN running pointless stats all the time. Stuff that is not a stat. It's like they just find like anecdotes and then present them as statistics, or they don't really have any, they don't, tell any type of news story about why it is a certain thing is happening within a game. And so that's what bugs me more than anything. Like, yeah, they have this basketball power index or whatever. That thing said the Cavaliers have a 3% chance of winning the title. It's like, what planet are y'all on? Like, how would you publish that? Like, unless you're just doing it as clickbait, like, yep, the Cavs have a 3% chance of winning the title. It's like, no, they don't. So the Cavs have a worse chance at winning than Toronto and Boston and Utah. No. Come on. Like, it doesn't even logically make sense. Like, how can you put a team like Utah ahead of the Cavs in terms of odds of winning a title when they'd have to play the Warriors in the second round, and they gave the Warriors like a 70% chance of winning it all? Like, it just doesn't add up. So, no pun intended. I just don't get – I don't get the statistical thing. I don't get how and they do. Oh, the other one that they always do on ESPN is the win probability. So like a team is down 25 points in the fourth quarter and then they come back and win. And then after the game, ESPN will say, our win probability says that at the start of the fourth quarter, they had a 1% chance of winning. It's like, I don't need your stats to tell me that it's hard to come back from a 25 point deficit in the fourth quarter. I don't need you to do that. So are we getting a little too carried away with the stat thing these days, Jabari?
Okay, so that I don't come across as a dinosaur, I want to say that I think statistics are important, you know, as a variable they can't be the only variable. You know what
right.
I mean? Like,
right.
we like, I think that there are certain individuals, certain entities, certain, you know, and definitely some that have benefited over these last few years with the rise of advanced analytics, you know, that lean far too heavily upon what numbers say. One thing I can say this, I'll use this as an example. Like, you get a lot of folks to say like, oh, well, Kobe this, and you know, like, you know, the old proverbial Kobe versus MJ, Kobe versus LeBron, Kobe, you know, sure. and vice versa. Okay. So, like, one of the main arguments that people will use against Kobe Bryant, for instance, and I'm only using this for perspective, is, oh, well, he never shot 50% from, you know, from the floor, and he was a 45%, you know, career shooter. Here's the deal. You got Michael Jordan, you got Kobe Bryant. Michael Jordan was a 50% shooter. Kobe Bryant was a 45% shooter. One, let's just say they probably took about 20 shots a game. One guy made 10, one guy made 9. Now, is that really a reason to say that that guy is just terrible compared to the other guy because he made one less shot out of 20? You know what I mean?
Right.
Now, again, that's a very rudimentary example. Yeah. But my reason for saying this is while I think that it's very important to, you know, like to add advanced analytics into your mix when you are evaluating talent, it cannot be the sole thing that you are evaluating the game, the talent, or the individual, or whatever the case is. It should, like I said, it should be a variable, but not the variable. I agree with Marc Gasol, you know, who I'm sure you were going to bring this up, who recently said this league is getting killed by the stats.
I mean, he's right, man. I mean, I just think people are just taking it to a place where they're allowing the statistics to dictate whatever it is that they want, whatever story they want to tell. And sometimes I think we can get carried away with it. Like, going back to the MVP discussion, just are we getting too far removed from the game if we're just going to sit here and say, well, Russell Westbrook, his true shooting percentage is actually only 1/100th of a point ahead of James Harden, and James Harden's usage rate is da-da-da-da-da. And this guy, you know, it's like, what do they do on the court? Like, what do your eyes tell you? This guy took over the game. This guy is flying up and down the court. He's doing everything he can do to will his team to victory. And sometimes I just think we can get a little too carried away. And it's annoying. I'm just going to say it. It's flat out, it's annoying. I know that from a birth certificate standpoint, I would fall in line with a millennial. I'm considered to be a millennial. I don't feel that I'm a millennial. I don't think like a standard millennial, I don't believe. But you know, it's kind of a millennial mentality, I guess, within the basketball nerd community that is just kind of taken off with this data that they just think it's just the end all and be all of everything. And it's not like it's just not. I just think we just have to keep it in its proper context. But now you cover the Lakers very closely. You're based out in Los Angeles.
Yes.
And so before we get into the NBA playoffs, where the good teams reside by and large, I wanted to make sure we took some time to discuss the Lakers. And I'm kind of, you know, poking the Lakers fans a little bit, only because they deserve it. And obviously the, you know, Lakers fans, they're some of the most arrogant fans you'll ever want to meet. There's nothing more annoying than a Lakers fan who just believes that they'll fix everything in 1 year just because they're the Lakers. It's the most annoying thing going in basketball, from a fan standpoint. But here we are. The Lakers have fallen on hard times, pretty much ever since Kobe got hurt, tore that Achilles, and then signed that monster contract after that. It's been downhill from there. Dr. Buss passed away. Things haven't been right since then. So I wanted to get your take, Jabari, on just kind of holistically the Lakers season. How do you grade this thing out? Because we saw quite a bit of developments with that franchise, obviously. They kind of won early, and then they won at the end, and they stunk in the middle for like 75 games or whatever it was. But, you know, Luke Walton was, I think, in his first or second year as coach. He did pretty well, I think, considering the talent that was there. But you still had a change in ownership, basically, a change in power at the top, with Jeannie Buss kind of clearing the house and booting her family out, putting Magic back in charge. Magic Johnson, who has the most hilarious Twitter handle of all time. You know, now he's in charge of like a franchise, and his first act as the new president of basketball operations is to hire an agent as a general manager, which is a strange move. The agent is Rob Lowe, apparently. Well, he's not Rob Lowe. He just looks like Rob Lowe. His name is Rob Pelinka. But at the end of the year, you know, the team is like winning games, and they're going to screw up their draft stock. And there's a provision wherein that if they fall out of the top three or four, they lose their lottery pick altogether. And here they are winning 5 or 6 to end the season. So all things considered, where do you shake out on this Lakers season?
Well, the season was what it was. They ended up in the lottery. You know what I mean? We can put lipstick on that pig all we want to say, talk about the 10-10 start and, you know, like the 5 out of 6 down the stretch. They ended up in the lottery. But to be honest with you, while I pegged them somewhere between 27 and 35 wins at best, it's about what I expected. I didn't expect it to be like so, you know, like, you know, top heavy. And then, you know, like, and then again at the end with, you know, just terrible in the middle. But when you're dealing with a team that is in their first year of a rebuild, and I know that people hate to hear that because they've been rough for the past 4 years, but let's be realistic. Last year and the years prior to that, it was still the, okay, let's get Kobe back onto the court. Let's, you know, let's see what we can do. And we still stink. Okay. And he's still getting hurt. At the end of this year, this is LA fans, this is Lakers fans' first taste of actual rebuild in a while. So I understand what you're saying about, like, you know, especially with some of the younger fans that didn't go through the last time this took place, or even the time before that it took place. You know, they don't have the context. They don't have perspective. So, like, for them, it's like, of course we're just going to just figure it out. Like, because yes, this is what we do. For those of us, and I'm a little bit older than you, a little bit older than a millennial, I grew up watching the 80s, and I watched what took place after Magic unfortunately was forced to retire. And I watched what took place, you know, after Shaq left. I saw all of those things. For those of us, we know this is par for the course. This is actually what every other franchise in the NBA has to deal with.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? It's just a part of it. So, you know, if I'm judging this season, I actually say it's a success. Especially if they're able to keep that pick, and we'll see. I think it's May 17th or 16th or somewhere around there. Well, you know, where they'll give the actual, you know, because they ended up with the third worst record, but that just gives you the third most ping pong balls. That doesn't guarantee you a top three pick. But if they keep that pick, I have to see it as a success, because I went into the season saying, okay, can D'Angelo Russell take another step? Did he take a huge step? No. Did he wow anybody? No. But if you watched each game, he got better over the course of the year. I went into the season saying, hey, what can Brandon Ingram be? I'd like to think he can be this, but let me see, you know, but show me. I'm Missouri right now. Show you got to show me. Right. And he did that. Brandon Ingram, for those individuals that aren't just looking at, oh, okay, hey, you only average 8 points a game, and they actually watched his progress over the course of the year, Brandon Ingram could be one of the better swingmen in the league by age 24. That's a long way away. I'm not making any crazy predictions. That's 5 years from now. But he showed me enough, and he showed me enough on both sides of the ball that I can confidently say, yeah, he's the goods. So he's the good.
A lot of people tend to really like Brandon Ingram. I just haven't seen enough of him, to be honest. I didn't see enough of him at Duke. I didn't see enough of him as a rookie to really know for sure what he's going to be down the road. But you think he's real deal, Holyfield?
I honestly do. Look, I put it like this. I like all of these young players, and they were all very, very cool to work with. You know, like in the locker room, everybody, you know, very polite and all of that good stuff. But I will say this. There's two guys on the roster that I think should be untouchable this summer. One of them is Brandon Ingram. The other one is actually Ivica Zubac. If you didn't see Ingram, you definitely didn't see much of Zubac, because a lot of his year was spent in the D League and in working his way into the proper shape to be able to compete.
Yeah, he's the big man. I saw him a little bit. I saw him a little bit before he got hurt at the end of the year, right?
There's something there with him. Now, again, we need to see a full year out of him in order to get a true assessment. But like I said, if I'm looking at this roster and I want to make, you know, bold improvements over the course of the summer, like these guys, as you call them, Rob Lowe, I'll call him Rob Pelinka. I actually think he looks like a combination of exactly Rob Lowe mixed with Larry Nance Jr. If you go and look at it, you'll never be able to not see it. It's always there. Larry Nance Jr. and Rob Lowe that's Rob Pelinka. Anyhow, if they really want to make a splash, something tells me that guy like D'Angelo, guy like Julius Randle, heading into his fourth year in the league, actually eligible for that early re-up. Guys like Jordan Clarkson. Something tells me that at least one of those guys may or may not be here moving forward.
Yeah, I would tend to agree that at least one of those guys are going to get moved. I mean, you have to figure that if they land a top three pick, they're going to be taking a long look at Markel Fultz and obviously Lonzo Ball. And so I don't know. I just don't know if there's room for D'Angelo and Clarkson after that.
And when I say that about these guys, that's not, you know, like, you know, for the Lakers fans out there that are going to listen to this, that's not being disrespectful towards these guys. I'm just being realistic about it. I look at a roster that has a ton of redundancy. In fact, when this new regime came in, that was the first thing that they mentioned. They've got three or four pairings where it doesn't necessarily make sense to have both of them on the team. So and when you hear all of these reports that they're looking to bring somebody in right away and have an impact player right away, I mean, this is 1 + 1 = 2. This isn't advanced math here.
Right. So, I mean, things are looking up, I guess, for the Lakers because they can't really go any other direction. And I am old enough to remember the last time the Lakers were in true rebuild mode after Magic retired. But before Shaq came in 96, those years in between, Shaq and Kobe came in 96, those years in between, and the Lakers were not hot in the streets, to say the least. Nope. But let's move on to some more successful teams. It's the NBA playoffs, y'all, getting underway in about 15 minutes. But let's go ahead and start with that first game, though. The Cavs and the Pacers, the first series to kick off the NBA playoffs. Jabari, I have a lot of thoughts on the Cavs. The Cavs are, you know, they're my squad. They're the squad that I follow the closest. I feel like I have a good pulse on this team. They stink on defense. That's what the pulse tells me, is that they're really bad on defense. But and they haven't, you know, there's a lot to dislike about the Cavs. And what's funny is that all the media people, all the pundits, all the people on all these websites and every place else, they have a lot of negative stuff to say about the Cavs. I've heard people speculate that Miami could have given them a run. I've heard people speculate that the Cavs were ducking the Wizards in the second round, which is why they deliberately tanked to get the 2 seed. I've heard so many kind of conspiracy theories as to why the Cavs have kind of underachieved this year. And this is kind of where I shake out on it. All Cavs fans wanted coming into this season was for the team to be healthy going into the playoffs. The playoffs start today, and the Cavaliers are reasonably healthy. And so that's really all you could ask for. With the exception of Andrew Bogut, there's been injuries on the season, but everybody that was supposed to be there is there. You know what I mean? And so they're going to have their full complement of all their players this year. They've added Derek Williams. They've added Darren Williams. They added Kyle Korver. All of those guys are contributors now to this team. But I think it kind of goes back to what we talked about earlier. You can kind of believe whatever narrative you want to believe about this team. They're either in the first year of a title defense and they have not looked like champions. Their defense is terrible. They don't seem to like each other all the time. They're not hungry anymore. Maybe LeBron is the only hungry one on the team. Everybody else is sitting back because they finally got Cleveland that ring after 52 years. So there's that narrative you can take. Or you can say, hey, look, man, J.R. Smith, his daughter was born 5 months premature at the start of the season, and then he broke his wrist, right? Yeah. Kevin Love had knee surgery in the middle of the season. Channing Frye lost his mother and his father within a month during the season. There's been a lot of things like that that haven't gone widely reported. I mean, the injuries have, but there's just been a lot of parts of this team that people haven't really taken fully into account. All of the roster moves, they had to integrate Kyle Korver, then Kyle Korver got hurt, then they had to integrate Darren Williams and Derek Williams, and then Shump was in and out of the lineup, Kyrie was missing games, LeBron was resting, the media was all over the team. You know, all that stuff, that's the kind of stuff that will contribute to a team only winning 51 games when the talent suggests they should win 61 games. But here we are, right? And we're at the end of the year, and they're in a good place physically to make another run at it. What do you think of this team? Do you think they are who we thought they were last year after the finals, or do you think that there's more that to be said about what they did during the regular season?
This is tough because I don't want to be disrespectful to your team, even though you did take a couple shots at the Lakers a little bit earlier. So I'm going to circle it back to the Lakers. They're either the 2010 or the 2011 Lakers.
Right.
And I see
the difference already, but go ahead.
You know what I'm saying? So LeBron's been in the final six straight times.
Six.
These other guys, and trying to make it seven.
Yeah, I left that part out when I was talking about what the Cavs, what the optimists would look at the Cavs and say, oh yeah, by the way, they also have the greatest closer in the game in Kyrie, arguably, and the best player in the game, inarguably, in LeBron.
Yeah, I would disagree with you, straightforward with you, about the greatest closer in the game being Kyrie, even though that's not taking anything away from what he can do.
Who is it then? Who is it? You don't even know. You see that? You see that? You see well, that? You know?
That's only because like you're just presenting me with this. I can, if you want me just to like just throw out names, okay.
No,
cool.
No, no. Okay, well, okay. Well, take 10 seconds and seriously, who do you think is the greatest closer in the game right now?
That is a good question. You know, maybe he is. Maybe part of me wishes that. Maybe part of me hopes that I get my final wish that both teams will be healthy. And yes, I'm still sticking with my preseason prediction of a third straight showdown.
It's never happened before in league history, by the way.
Exactly. I'd love to see it. I've got my fingers crossed, hoping that they can make it. That both teams can make it through. You know, whether it's an easy path to the finals or a difficult path to the finals. You know, relatively unscathed. So okay, I won't take anything away from him. So but back to the original.
Sure.
They're either the 2010 or 2011 Lakers. And what I mean by that is you've got a lot of tread on those tires. Like, yes, they brought in some guys. Yes, they've had, you know, ups and downs in terms of, you know, things going wrong. But quite frankly, that happens every season with every NBA team. But I feel like even with the guys that they brought in, either they're at that, you know, at the end of the run. And what I mean by that is not that they're end of the run as a group, the end of the run as the end of this group's run or 1 year past. Now, for anybody that didn't see the 2010 Lakers, they were in their third straight, run to the finals. They pretty much were gassed at the end of that. It took game seven, a brutal game seven win at home against the Celtics in order to, complete that, that narrative or that, that conversation with that group. And then in the next year, they came out, they had a lot of the same struggles, a lot of the same defensive struggles. They weren't quite as sharp as they had been in previous years. They had a quick little run in the second half of the year 2011. I think it's something like an 18-1 or 18-3 start in the second half. But then when the playoffs came around, they eked out a first round, and then if I'm not mistaken, they got the doors blown off them. By a hungry and younger and just game ready Dallas Mavericks team. Correct. Now, when I say that, I don't think Cleveland's going out in the second round. That's not what I'm saying. But part of me does wonder: are they going to have enough in the tank? Are they, is everybody going to be, sharp enough if they face a healthy Golden State team in the finals this year?
So, but the East though, you think they can make it out the East again?
I do think they're going to make it. I think they will. Like, I like narratives as much as anybody else. I would love to have seen had the Celtics gone out at the deadline and gotten a Paul George or even a Carmelo Anthony or somebody else that they could at least balance things out when push came to shove, when you're playing a superior team or, a supreme team like the defending champion Cleveland Cavaliers in a playoff series. But they didn't do that. So I don't really see them as a true threat, to the Cavs. I'm not saying that would have guaranteed that they could have beaten the Cavs, but it at least would have made it a more interesting conversation. The Washington Wizards, I love what they've done. In fact, I'll go on record and say I was dead wrong about Scott Brooks, because after 12 games, I said, well, that situation clearly has not worked. And, and I question his ability to turn that around. And I'm an individual. I don't care whether I was right or wrong. I'll acknowledge it. That man did a great job. Those guys did a great job. Bradley Beal was fantastic. John Wall, he's not going to be in the MVP discussion, but he played MVP basketball for them. You know what I mean? Like they were great. Oubre had an outward. You had some moments. Otto Porter Jr. was great. So kudos to them. They're not going to beat you. They're not.
Yeah, I would agree with most all of that. I think. Look, the Cavs, they know what their goal is in mind. They knew all along the end game was the playoffs, and so they kind of geared down a little bit during the season, and this is kind of the result of it. Now, I think that defensively, because we know defense has a lot to do with effort, I don't think that they're ever going to be just a juggernaut on the defensive end, but I think they can turn it up to a notch to where they become respectable on defense. But when I look at the team's strengths, when I look at the strengths of this Cavs team, and this is something that nobody's really talking about, but why are they good? Aside from the fact that they have LeBron and Kyrie, right? Okay, we get that. But why are they so difficult to defend and why are they so good? It's because the Cavaliers are the best three-point shooting team in basketball. And a lot of people would look at that and say, what? But no, seriously, they're better than Golden State. they're better than Houston, and I'll tell you why. Did a little research, right? And I kind of been watching the Cavs all season, so I kind of had a feeling that this was in fact the case. But Cavs had 9 guys on their roster shooting 36% or better from 3 on the year, right? And that's not including Swish. Okay, Swish wasn't even one of those 9 guys. And now it did include James Jones, and he hardly ever plays. So even if you throw him out, that's 8 guys that shot over 36% from 3. The Warriors had just 6 guys shoot 36% from 3 this year. And that's including David West, who only took 8 threes all year. So you can throw him out, right? So they really only had 5 guys that shot 36% and over, and only 2 from that shot over 40%. I believe the Cavs had 4 guys that shot over 40%. And the Houston Rockets, the other team that people kind of associate with great three-point shooting, they only had 5 guys shooting 36% or better, and that includes Troy Williams, who only played 6 games with the team, so you can throw him out. So they really only had 4 guys. The Cavs were 2nd in the league in three-point percentage, and they were 2nd in the league in attempts. The team that was better than them percentage-wise was San Antonio, but San Antonio was way down the list in terms of attempts. And the team that obviously attempted more was Houston, because they attempted more threes than anybody in league history in one season by a single team, because they hoist 40 threes a game. So the Cavaliers are the best three-point shooting team in the league in an era where everybody's talking about three-point shooting. Everybody's concern is three-point shooting. That's what it's all about, right? And the Cavs are the best three-point shooting team. And they have the guy that can unlock it all, and that's LeBron. They have the guy who attracts the attention and can make the open pass, because I believe he's actually the best passer in the league. So even though Indiana has guys like CJ Miles, who can just – he's a Cavalier killer, and I wouldn't be surprised if he goes off against them at certain points in the series, and Paul George is a tremendous player, I'd be surprised if this went beyond 5 games. I don't see – I'd kind of expect the Cavs to sweep the Pacers in spite of the fact that they have not looked good. And that doesn't mean it's going to be an uncompetitive sweep, but I expect the Cavaliers to move on. It sounds like you do too. Let's go with the Bucks and Raptors. That's the second game Saturday. Real quick, what are your thoughts on that series? How do you see that shaking out?
I wish the Bucks were fully healthy.
I do too, man. Jabari, man, he was good, wasn't he?
He was so good this year. In fact, he was neck and neck with Giannis, in my opinion, you know, in that same conversation with, you know, obviously, you know, guys like Jokic and other guys that for most improved, like he was that good. And once Chris Middleton came back, and then I think they lost Jabari the very next day, or like maybe even the day before, it was just terrible.
Right.
Like, so that being said, while I'm looking forward to watching the Greek Freak, I'm looking forward to watching with Brogdon, as we mentioned earlier, and some of those guys can do in this playoff run. I'm not expecting them to, you know, to come out in this. I mean, obviously Toronto is still trying to, you know, still trying to get Kyle Lowry going again, you know, after missing some time, you know, so I'm not going to say that they're going to blow the doors off of them, but I expect the Raptors to take this in 6.
Who's the best player in the series?
The best player in the series is Giannis.
I agree. And that's not a shot at DeRozan or Lowry, although this is a shot at DeRozan or Lowry. They suck in the playoffs, and they suck. Like, Kyle Lowry has sucked in the playoffs his whole career. Like, this wasn't just, like, last year. This is, like, the year before in Toronto and the year before that, and, like, before that when he was in Houston. Like, for whatever reason, he stinks in the postseason, which is why when I see people, like, rank the top point guards and they put Kyle Lowry over Kyrie, I just laugh out loud. Like, are you serious? Like, Sports Illustrated did that after the finals. And they said it was the same kind of thing. It was like, how can you put Kyle Lowry ahead of Kyrie? And Kyle Lowry was terrible in the playoffs. DeMar DeRozan underperforms in the playoffs as well.
I think people are, you know, we're still doing that because, quite frankly, Kyrie doesn't play defense with any type of consistency.
And that's totally fair. Totally fair.
But at this stage, I'll take him. I'll take him over. I'll take him over Kyle. And that's not. And I like Kyle Lowry.
Yeah, I like him too.
I love what he's done. You know, look, I remember him when he was just a nobody coming off the bench for the Houston Rockets for middle of the pack.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say the Houston Rockets when he was with them. You know, so like to get to the point where he's at now, absolutely phenomenal. But it is difficult for me to completely ignore the fact that he and DeMar DeRozan have not been able to get it done when the postseason has come around. Now getting it done doesn't necessarily mean, oh, hey, they haven't won a final. Because look, only one team wins the finals.
Right.
But to your point, They don't just struggle. They play significantly worse than they have in the regular season in the playoffs. And you know, and that's just, you know what, that's something that, hey, I hope they can remedy this year, because I would love to see a showdown in the Eastern Conference Finals. I would love it. Yeah. I just don't know that I can necessarily hold my breath for it.
Well, the Raptors will play the Cavs in the second round if that's what you're implying. So that would be a second round matchup. But and I think too with Milwaukee, there's a length issue that Toronto's going to have to deal with, and there's a huge bench advantage in spite of the fact that PJ Tucker, I believe he comes off the bench for them still. But PJ Tucker's addition to Toronto was huge for them. I think he gave them a little toughness that they needed. I still don't think that they're going to have enough to overcome that and get to the finals, even though I've heard some people say that they think Toronto's the smart bet in the East. I think that's ignoring all of what we just talked about the last 3 minutes, is that they just don't – though their best players have underperformed in the postseason. But that length issue and that bench issue for Toronto in this series against Milwaukee is going to be a problem for them. And so I would give the Raptors the edge, but I could definitely see it going six, maybe seven games. San Antonio and Memphis is the third game Saturday. Let's go through that real quick. Tony Allen just got hurt the other day, which stinks for Memphis.
Yep.
The $153 million man is there for Memphis, and he's had a great year. It's so funny, man. I think Mike Conley Jr. is a good player. I think he's in the perfect situation, man. He got paid the absolute most money in the history of the NBA ever. But nobody's holding him to that standard because they know what type of player he is, and he's not getting attacked for not performing up to that contract like Joe Johnson did a few years ago when he signed that massive extension in Atlanta. Like, he's kind of he's the highest paid guy, and people are still like, yeah, Mike Conley's the most underrated guy in the league. It's like, I think he's properly rated, but he's still very good. On the Spurs side of things, obviously Kawhi is fantastic. Can we finally admit that Patty Mills is better than Tony Parker? Can we say that out loud now?
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Patty Mills was better than Tony Parker last year.
Thank you. Absolutely, he was better than Tony Parker last year, but I'm glad you said that.
I mean, no disrespect, of course. Like, Tony has been phenomenal for his career, but, yeah, you know, his body just isn't what it used to be. His body doesn't let him do the things that he used to be able to do
with any
consistency.
So here's my thing with the Spurs real quick. And I wrote this at the start of the season on the website, hiphopsportsupport.com, but what is it? Like, if we – so Tim Duncan retired, right? And so everybody for years talked about what a great locker room guy he was, what a great teammate he is, a great person, and I don't doubt any of that stuff. If all that stuff about Tim Duncan is true, then there has to be some sort of residual effect from him not being around anymore. Like, if he's that good of a teammate, that good of a guy, I'd like to think that maybe his presence on a day-to-day would hurt this team a little bit. And maybe not. Maybe, you know, he left such an indelible mark on the franchise that that's not the case, and that there's such a strong infrastructure there that that stuff doesn't matter. But part of me just feels like if he matters that much, or if he mattered that much all the years that he was there and his leadership and guidance and all that stuff came into play, then how does that not hurt them now that he's not there? I would just wonder that about this team. And I wonder, is Kawhi ready to take the next step? I think the Spurs win this series. I think there's going to definitely be some competitive moments, though.
I think it'll be a fun series. Obviously, you've got the Gasol brothers going against one another. And even Marc Gasol may be the best, you know, and when I say maybe, he is the better of the two right now. But Kawhi is the best player in this series. Okay.
Hands down, 6:30.
Yeah, it just is. He just is on both sides of the ball. He's the best player in this series, in my humble opinion. I think it's going to be a fun series. I hear what you're saying about the lack of, you know, the lack of Tim Duncan, but I think the fact that, to your point, the fact that they still have that same infrastructure, they still have the same, you know, they still have the same system, still have the same coach, same front office, and they still, let's not forget, they still have Manu and Tony on that roster.
True.
I think there's enough continuity there. And you know what? Kawhi has taken that next step. He was already great. Like, he was a finals MVP 3 years ago already, but he's taken several steps even from that point as an offensive player. I think, you know, I guess seamless would be the best way to describe them. They've transitioned from David Robinson to, you know, obviously Tim Duncan to Kawhi Leonard as seamlessly as I've ever seen in professional sports.
It would be like the Packers going from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers, and then and 6 years from now, like, Aaron Rodgers retires, and then the next Aaron Rodgers comes after that.
Exactly.
Exactly. And they traded for Kawhi on draft night, so you can't really hold it against them. They didn't get lucky. they sought him out and got him. Mm-hmm. So you got to give him credit for that. I just wonder, though, if Kawhi stumbles or if he fails to reach Golden State in the conference finals this year, I mean, I think it's fair to start pointing the finger at him a little bit, because everybody loves Kawhi. It's so fashionable to love Kawhi, say he's one of the better players, underrated, you know, he's quiet and all that stuff. I get all that. He's great on both ends. But he also was the best player on the team when they got knocked out in the first round. What was that, 2 years ago by the Clippers? The year after they won the title, and they got knocked out in the first round. And then last year, I think it was Oklahoma City that put him out. I think they just kind of just ran right past him, and you know, he just kind of was powerless to stop it. So I'm just curious to see if the narrative changes at all as they kind of go along. Clippers and Jazz. This is one that a lot of people are predicting an upset. I think this is one of those cases where too many people are predicting an upset, and it's actually mm-hmm. going to go back the other way. You kind of, if you gamble enough on sports, you'll kind of see that happen quite a bit. And I'll be the first to tell you, man, I'm a CP3 apologist. he's my favorite player in basketball. I actually met him last summer, but briefly. But he's my favorite player in basketball. I think he's underrated in spite of the fact that, you know, people criticize him. There's memes about him now. Like the two teams that haven't made the Western Conference Finals in the last 10 years, and then they show Chris Paul in a Hornets jersey and Chris Paul in a Clippers jersey. I don't think that that's totally fair, but it's a fact, though. But I don't think it's totally fair. So Chris Paul, actually, I believe when he was in the lineup this year, the Clippers won 70% of their games. That's a lot of game. That means they're pretty damn good when he's in there. I think Utah is a very intriguing team. I don't know that they have enough to stop Chris Paul, because he tends to eat up Utah. It really just kind of depends on how far Blake can take them. And I think Blake is the worst crunch time star player in basketball. So what are your thoughts on this series?
I'll be quick with this one. I know it's fun to say the Jazz are going to knock them off, but part of me feels like the Clippers, part of me feels like, for one, they realize it's now or never. It's literally now or never for them.
Desperation.
But also, they're the better team between those two teams. Okay. I get it. Like, the Clippers are a fun punching bag. They always have been. And quite frankly, they always will be. I'm talking about, this isn't just in LA. Those memes don't just get circulation in LA. folks have been talking about the Clippers for years, since the 80s. And I've been a part of that since the 80s. So I will openly acknowledge that. But no, like the Clippers, Chris Paul's healthy. Blake Griffin's healthy. The rest of those guys are ready to go. I think they're going to win this series. I'll go there. I think they're going to win the series in 5 games.
Wow. Okay.
I do not think the Jazz are going to beat them.
I think it's going to be about maybe 6, but not like, you know, just kind of like we talked about before. Just because a series ends in 4 games doesn't mean it wasn't competitive. And just because a series ends in, you know, like 6 games doesn't mean it was competitive. Like, we've seen 6-game series where all the games were blowouts. So I think this could be a competitive 6-game series. But I don't know. I expect the Clippers to win. I do. I expect them to win. But we'll see how it goes, though. I don't know. They also have this thing where they just tend to fold under pressure, man. And some of that's on Chris, but I think the majority of it is on Blake and Doc. And so I think the biggest mistake that they made was making Doc GM. And I don't think that he has the balls, frankly, to make the big moves that they need, because he's an emotional dude and he gets too attached to players, man. That's my take on them. So, but we both have the Clippers advancing. Hawks and Wizards. I like Washington, and when I think of the biggest threats to the Cavs in the East, I think of Washington, because I think the best player in the East that doesn't play for the Cavs is probably John Wall. I think Paul George is right there. I know some people put Giannis there already. I know some people like Isaiah Thomas, and you know, I think it's John Wall, man. And I think that the Cavs have a hell of a time trying to slow him down, because he's so damn fast. I think that, and we saw John Wall, we've seen him dominate in the playoffs before in the first round setting. So the Atlanta, they're a nice team. They're not going to beat themselves usually, but there's just not a lot there. So I'd be surprised if Washington lost.
I'd be surprised as well. I agree with you on that one. I won't reiterate, the same points, but I'll say this. I don't think Atlanta can handle that backcourt in any way. You know, somebody on the flip side could try to say, oh, well, you know, but, you know, the Washington can't handle, what they bring in the middle. And while that may be true, I don't necessarily anticipate Atlanta's bigs having having the impact that they would need to have to offset what Washington's guards are going to do or what I anticipate Washington's guards are going to do to them in that series. I think they're going to win that series in either five or six.
Yeah, I could see that going five, unless, you know, and the thing with Dwight Howard is, I mean, like you said, he's an anchor down low, but he's one of those guys where if he's having a big offensive day, it's usually at the expense of the rest of the team. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think that's a great scenario for the Wizards. If he's playing well, let him do his thing. Let him score. That means they're not shooting from the outside. That means they're not running the floor. That means a lot of other things aren't happening when he's doing his thing. So, Blazers and Warriors is the Sunday afternoon game tomorrow. I think we both have Golden State advancing, but I don't, you know, I've since last summer, I went on the podcast in July and said, I don't think the Warriors are going to win at all. And because super teams don't win it in their first year. And that was the premise, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So we've seen Golden State have stretches where they look tremendous, but they haven't had a stretch where they look tremendous where both Curry and Durant were out there at the same time since like February. And so it's going to take a little bit of time for Durant to work it back in. I think that Houston probably has the best chance of knocking them off, because I think Houston is the biggest wild card, because all they have to do is get hot from three. They're going to take so many threes that if they just get hot, they can outshoot the Warriors. But they're probably the team with the best chance. And again, the Clippers apologist in me wants to say that I can see a scenario in which the Clippers could beat them in the second round, but the logical analysis says otherwise. So I take it you have the Warriors advancing, and do you have any thoughts on them? Even though Portland did go 14-5 after they made the trade for Nurkic, but Nurkic isn't right, so good night, Portland.
Yeah, if Nurkic were there, you know, and hadn't gotten hurt and they were continuing the role, I would say, like, hey, you know what? At least it can be a fun series. Full disclaimer, you know, full disclosure, the way that you pretty much just admitted that you'll cape for Chris Paul, I do the same for Dame Lillard. In fact, that's my best closer. There you go.
Okay. So this podcast has gone well. I'm going to have you on again, and then mm-hmm. we can get into a Dame Lillard debate, because I'm not a Dame Lillard guy. Me wrong. I don't dislike him. I think he's very, very good, obviously. I think he'd be a fool to think otherwise. But when I think of the top flight point guards in the league, I just put him a notch below the rest of the group. And I think he can kind of get sucked into those one-on-one matchups a little too frequently, even though they kind of need him to do that in Portland, and I get that. But Dame Lillard's a great player, and he is a closer, so I'm not going to knock him for that. But I mean, is this going to go five games even?
The adjustment period is accurate, so I'll at least you know, pay Portland the respect to say that it'll go five. But quite frankly, on paper and in the back of my head, I'm like, yeah, can we end this in three?
like we used to do back in the day, the three game sweep.
I could be wrong.
Get it
I
out of here.
Wrong,
No, you're not wrong. now this is where I think it gets a little interesting, man. Bulls, Celtics. The Celtics are the quote unquote number one seed in the Eastern Conference. I got to tell you, man, I like Chicago in this series. I do.
I do.
If I had to pick a first round upset, that's a legitimate upset, I think this is it, because I just think, just let the Bulls get one. If they get one in Boston in these first two, I think Boston's going to feel the heat. They haven't been number one before. Chicago's going to come for their neck. They got a little playoff history, these two teams. I think they have enough bodies that they can throw at Isaiah Thomas. Now Isaiah is going to find his spots and he's going to get his points, but if they can turn him into a volume scorer and you know, throw Jimmy Butler, throw Michael Carter Williams, throw Dwayne Wade, throw, I'm missing somebody up there. Rondo, throw Rondo at him. You know, those guys, I mean, they're not necessarily all great defenders. Jimmy is, but the rest, maybe not as much anymore, but I think it's enough where that they could throw some bodies at Isaiah to slow him down. And if you slow him down, what else is there in Boston? Like, seriously, like, what else do they have? I don't know what else they have outside of him. They kind of go as he goes, and they didn't do anything to improve the team. So, I mean, and there's a huge rebounding advantage for the Bulls. So, I mean, tell me if I'm crazy.
I don't think you're crazy at all. In fact, I'll say this. If there's going to be a first-round upset, that is going to be the series where it's at. I just don't. Like if Wade hadn't gotten hurt and were like really, really, 100% healthy, I would be like, okay, you know what? They can at least make this interesting. I didn't think that Chicago was built for the regular season. They were more built for like a series.
Right.
So I would have liked to have seen that. I agree with you in terms of the bodies that they can throw at, you know, the longer bodies that they can throw at Isaiah and anybody else, you know, with Boston that's going to try to score. But honestly, I think Boston's defense, you know, can get turned up enough to where I just don't necessarily know that the Bulls can, you know, will be able to score consistently against Boston if they're at their best defensively. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I know Jimmy Butler, you know, he's prone to go off for a 40-point game. Yes, that's it. You know, that can happen. But, in a series, you got to do that four times.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So I don't think you're crazy at all. And I agree with you that if an upset does take place, it's going to be there. Part of me say, yeah, I have to believe that Boston's going that they can take care of business with a home court advantage and a top seed.
They should. They should. But that's why they play the games, right?
That is.
Last series, and I wish we had a little more time for this one, but Thunder Rockets. You know, we talked a lot about Russ and Harden already, though. So, I mean, I don't know how you see it going. I mean, I think this is could go either way. And again, with Houston, I think Houston is the wild card team of the playoffs. I think they can beat Golden State in the conference finals if they get hot enough, if they make it there. But I also think that they could lose in the first round of Oklahoma City because they just take too many threes and shoot themselves out of games. And they're not, aside from like Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon most of the time, like they're not a great three-point shooting team. They just chuck a lot. So, and they don't play any defense. So, and Oklahoma City is great on the boards, and Russ might just go full supernova and just do what he do because he's an X-Man. You know what I'm saying? So, and I mean like a mutant. That's what I mean. So, how do you have that series shaken out?
I'd love to see Russ be able to steal one of those first couple games in Houston and make this a conversation. I obviously you're exactly right in terms of, you know, the Rockets and their shooting. If they're hot, if three or four of those guys are hot, you're not going to beat them. And by you, I'm talking about OKC. Yes, I still think Golden State can beat them, and like a good Spurs team can beat them. But like OKC's not beating them if they're hitting their shots. But say a couple of those guys are struggling, and it's only one or two of them knocking shots down, and they really have to lean upon James Harden. And say they're, say OKC can somehow get those bigs to show up the way that they did in last year's playoffs. You know, when you had Steven Adams really assert himself and kind of show that, hey, you know what, that guy can play. Like he's not just a big body. He can actually do some things with the ball as well as on the defensive end. If Enes Kanter can go off, if Oladipo, look, all of this to say, I can't really talk myself into OKC winning, but I will say, I think this series can be a lot more fun than people realize, especially if, like you said, or like we both said, if OKC can get one of those first games, look, all bets are off at that stage, but I still would expect the Rockets to win this series.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was gonna say I don't think that they can score enough, man. Oklahoma City, like I think that it's just. I mean, the Rockets score like 110 a game, and you know, like if Russ, like Russ has to score 40 pretty much, and generate like another 30 or 25 points in assists. Like it's just a tall task, man, to ask one man to beat a team like Houston, just given the style of play that they have. So I begrudgingly think Houston's gonna win it probably in six games.
Here's one last thing. I think Russ could honestly average a quadruple double in this series. And what I mean by that,
turnovers.
With the turnovers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Look, Russ is going to get, he's going to have one of those games where he gets like 45 points, 18 rebounds, 16 assists, you know, and like 13 turnovers.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Not everybody loves the way he plays. I absolutely love the way he attacks the game. Obviously, there are times where it's like, okay, that was a bit much. But you know what? With a guy like him, you have to take the good with the bad. Because you're not going to be able to limit, and kudos to, Billy Donovan for realizing, okay, well, we've got this guy with this, just indomitable will. Go ahead. Let's see what you got. It's worked to this stage. Trouble is, in the postseason, you know it, I know it, your listeners know it. That's really difficult to maintain when teams can really lock in. The only caveat is Houston doesn't really lock in.
No.
So like I said, it can be fun, but I expect Houston to win.
All right, man. Well, we appreciate you joining the preseason podcast of the year. That is Mr. Jabari Davis of Basketball Insiders. Tell all your good friends at Basketball Insiders to listen to this podcast. Maybe we can have some more of them on the show down the road. Where can people find you, though?
Oh, easy. Find me on Twitter. That's the easiest way. You know what?
What's your handle?
Jabari Davis NBA altogether. You're pretty easy. One person I'll recommend that you have on, because I think you guys would vibe well, is Lane Green. Reach out to him. Yeah, he's generally pretty available, and he's always an interesting conversation. He's based out of Atlanta.
There we go, man. We just got another contact just like that. But we're gonna make sure we have you on again to have the Kyrie Dame Lillard debate. And and it sounds like you're leaning Warriors and Cavs again.
I am. I think it's going to be Warriors and Cavs.
I think.
And, no offense, but I think you're going to be upset this year.
Well, you know what? I think we're not going to see Warriors and Cavs still. I'm going to err on the side of 70 years of basketball history that says the same two teams don't make it 3 years in a row. And maybe I'll be really upset if it's not the Cavs in the finals, but something's going to happen. Something's going to happen, and we might not see Golden State go as far as everybody thinks, just like last year. But thank you for joining the podcast, y'all. Check us out at hiphopsportsreport.com, of course, on Twitter and Facebook, iTunes and Stitcher. Go ahead and rate the podcast and subscribe, y'all. NBA playoffs, man. Enjoy them. We out of here. Peace.